And we're glad you joined us for the podcast. We're going to be working at the end of Matthew 1 and the beginning of Matthew 2, working on the birth story today. We appreciate so much the good number. I think we had like record listening last week to the podcast.
Did we now?
Yeah, that's terrific. And as well, a lot of feedback about the beginning of the reading. We're glad you guys are excited about it. Hope the podcast is going to contribute to your understanding of the reading. We do want to go back and talk a little bit about the genealogies. If you go back up to Matthew 1, we just had some interesting conversation about all of that. One of the comments that was made, you made a big deal about the groups of 14.
Well, technically Matthew does.
In genealogy. And, well, you followed up his comment. And someone pointed out that actually, though, even the group of three sets of 14, the number three has biblical significance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we hear the word, we see three, and you know, for some people, you naturally go towards Trinity. Part of why, you know, I mean, ultimately, God only knows exactly why he did it this way. One other more immediate to what we were talking about last week, though, with why the number 14, because it's you know, if how the Hebrew letters of David's name add up to 14 the way they did numbers. But also in Hebrew, David's name is spelled with three consonants, three letters. So it also may be that. And then part of it's just, you know, this is, in one sense, the very nature of these groupings, you know, they're not just 14s, but you have basically from the call of Abraham to the coming of the king, you know, David, we think about Saul as the first king, but Saul was the first king, like the nations, the first king of God's choosing in the sense of my own heart, my kind of guy, is David. And so basically you have from Abraham to the coming of the king, and then from the coming of the king to the loss of the monarchy, and then the whole post-exilic period that leads up to Jesus. And so it's also a natural grouping for the way God looks at it. The two key covenants, from Abraham to David and from David to the second David, you know, may also just be how God is looking at it, the two crucial covenants in which we situate Jesus.
The other thing that I think is really important in the genealogies, we should have commented on this because it's going to weave its way into the rest of the birth story, is the presence of Gentiles.
Yes, yes.
In the list.
Ironically, all women, by and
women
large.
Women and Gentiles.
Yeah. And
which is unusual for genealogies.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And part of it too then is, you know, just like Mary is going to have an unusual birth story here.
Right.
You know, some of these women, you know, were involved in an odd, you know, either sexual circumstances like in Bathsheba's case or birth circumstances, you know. And different forms of barrenness, you know, kind of Tamar the widow,
right.
Ruth is a widow, Bathsheba is a widow. And then comes Mary, who's not a widow, has to find a new husband, has to find new life to have a baby, so to speak. Mary is the opposite. She's not lost her husband. She hasn't taken a husband yet, officially, completely consummated the marriage.
Right.
And so again, you know, you've got those little echoes, those little hints of the work of God. And then, yeah, you know, there are Gentiles from the beginning of Matthew's gospel. We talked about last week a little bit about, you know, how much Matthew's emphasizing some very Jewish emphases, you know, by telling a story from Matthew and David, you know, even the covenants, Matthew and David are emphasized as opposed to Luke's genealogy, which goes back to Adam, wants to be a little more universal. But even there are Gentiles being grafted in, to use Paul's language from Romans, being grafted into the genealogy from the beginning. And then we're about to meet in this week's reading, if we're ready to segue there, you know, we're about to meet some other Gentiles who God leads into the story at the very beginning.
So it's foreshadowing.
Yeah.
That this is bigger, even though that was in the prophets.
Yeah.
And not always understood
or appreciated.
Or, well, maybe there's a little willful blindness
that's
going
right.
on there,
that's right.
But we continue to get those Gentile hints, and I think you're right. As we get into the birth story, we begin to get more hints about this. In fact, go ahead.
I was going to say, well, just along that line, you know, for all the familiarity of Matthew's conclusion, we kind of forget. I mean, go to all nations and make disciples. Well,
right, that's the bookend at the end.
And
right?
So, you know, what Matthew is really doing is doing ironically what you know Isaiah and other prophets have done as well, which is, you know, you haven't been elevated or chosen for your own sake. You were always chosen to be, even as a Jewish people, to be God's vehicle to bring the knowledge of God to the entire human race.
Right.
And so even as, excuse me, as heavily covenantal as David is, you know, in the Jewish context, you know, he literally starts with Abraham and David in the genealogies. it was always to the end of unifying the human race. And so Matthew's gospel, actually our favorite version of the Great Commission, of the sending out of the apostles, Matthew hits that hard literally at the beginning and the end.
So the thing to say about the genealogies is that there's more here than the list. And and really—
No, there's a theology in here.
Yeah, it shouldn't be flyover country.
That's right.
It's got to be something probably where we need to dig in a little deeper. The interesting thing I think we forget about the birth stories is that from one angle, the birth story is not very biographical. And what I mean by that is— usually when we write a biography, we're filling it up with all the details. We know, where they were born and what happened to a child and all these kind of things. And really none of the Gospels do that. They're not truly biographies, at least in the sense that we would think of them.
Right.
But instead, there's been selected pieces of material, and I think you really see that in Matthew 1 and 2, that just a very few things are selected to be included here, which should make us kind of stand back and say, okay, why are these pieces here? Why am I be told this and not something else? And I think that, for example, at the beginning of chapter 2 with the story of the Magi is a really, really good example, because I usually think that that we're just kind of more intrigued with this really strange story. I mean, the whole star thing is kind of freaky to me.
Right.
Clearly, there has to be revelation here that we didn't know about, because how did they know to follow the star?
Right.
And why would they choose to go such a great distance? Clearly, there's got to be more to that. That's not even included here.
Right. Or at the very least, I know some commentators, there's that line that Balaam, a Gentile, when Balak was asked to, he was being asked
Balak
to curse.
Balak for the rest of us.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. Translate that for me. But in one of Balaam's oracles, he talks about a star and a scepter that's coming.
Right.
Verse 24:17 in Numbers, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob. A scepter shall rise out of Israel. It will crush the forehead of Moab. I can't read. It will crush the forehead of Moab. Thank you. And break down the sons of Sheth. The coming of a powerful ruler. I see him, but not yet.
Right.
And of course, the power of that is this. Well, he was supposed to be cursing to their destruction in theory, Israel. And ironically, God, kind of forcibly has Balaam prophesy, no, there's a coming powerful ruler who will actually crush all the nations under Israel. And so, maybe because these people tend to be scholars and read all sorts of literatures, maybe something like that. But yeah, to your point, we don't know. We know there were dreams because the wise men are going to have a dream not to go back to Herod. So it is interesting to ponder all that.
But I do think we know one reason why this is here, and that is— these are Gentiles.
Well, that's right.
And so from the very beginning of Matthew telling the story, we've got Gentiles in the genealogy. Now in chapter 2, we have a lengthy segment here devoted to these Gentiles who have this impulse to come and see the baby that will be king. And so,
right.
And so we have that. Then we have all the drama with Herod,
right,
and his determination to kill the child. And ultimately a slaughter of the innocents. And really, think about it. Those are the two pieces of the birth story. We passed over the part at the end of Matthew where the birth is announced to Mary.
Right.
But then the story is largely the story of the Magi and the story of Herod.
Right. And what's funny about that is, again, we're used to conflating the birth story of Jesus, putting Matthew and Luke together.
Right.
Since one of our goals is to read Matthew as Matthew, and this is harder for all the familiar with the birth story, to disentangle that, to read just, this is what Matthew wanted to know, so why does Matthew tell it this way? Well, going back to the genealogy emphasizes the Abraham and the Davidic, and thus the royal aspect, the way the story of the fallout of the birth— which is, the birth itself is much less focused on in Matthew than in Luke, is to basically emphasize a king has come.
Right.
Because that's what I mean. Why are the, what do the Magi say, even when they show up in Herod's court? We're looking for the king.
Which makes Herod relevant here, because now he sees Jesus as a threat to him.
And so what you already have there even is a snapshot of the fundamental conflict between Jesus and the world, which is rival claims of authority.
Even before he comes into the world, or as he comes into the world,
right,
we have this this struggle,
right,
for worldly power versus
who gets
spiritual
to rule.
Power. Yeah,
who gets to
rule? That's exactly right.
And so already you see the whole, because that's, you know, he's the son of David. He is the coming heir of David that we've been waiting for. The genealogy has set us up for that, and that's literally how Matthew wants us to enter into the story. Is this contested kingship. Mm-hmm. Between Herod, who represents more than just himself, you know, he will represent any earthly power all the way up to Rome itself in that era, and down to, you know, any earthly power today, you know, spiritual, temporal, political, otherwise, that claims authority. You know, we have governments today that claim the right to remake marriage and say what marriage is. I mean, that's a claim to authority.
Right.
And so you have these conflicting claims.
So I think when we read Matthew to be true to Matthew, we need to kind of put Luke out
right.
of our mind.
Right.
And instead of thinking biographically,
right,
think thematically.
Absolutely.
There are some pieces chosen here to tell the story that Matthew wants to tell. And I think the thing to focus on are, what are the pieces and why are these pieces included? Now, with that in mind, several prophecies cited here.
Right.
And we ought to at least briefly comment on that. Y'all may have some questions about this. And Jeff and I are going to get into the specifics of it, but we are going to pitch it out to you. And if you want to know more, we can talk more about it. But sometimes when you look at these prophecies that are being fulfilled and then you go back to the source, it's like it doesn't add up. You and I are talking before the broadcast here about chapter 2 and verse 15, out of Egypt I called my son.
Right.
And that doesn't, when you go back and read the original,
it's kind of a little odd in Hosea's context.
It doesn't seem like it connects. And so I think the thing to remember is, very often when we're looking at biblical prophecy, we're looking for this in the Old Testament is fulfilled here in the New Testament. This is that kind of equation.
Yeah, a very simplistic one-to-one ratio
right.
kind of idea.
And sometimes that's not always idea.
Right.
The idea. Sometimes what he's saying is, this thing that's happening now is like that
yeah.
that happened
yeah.
back then, or there's a thematic connection
right.
back to that.
You know, and the fancy word for some of that we don't think of much in terms of is typology, you know, which is a biblical word. In fact, it even comes from tupos, a Greek word, and the New Testament in Greek uses that word sometimes.
Right.
Paul uses that word to describe some of the correlations he's making in his writing. And that's the thing. So we need to understand it's not just this ratio, you know, of one-to-one correlations that we're looking for. In fact, ironically, typology may be even more fundamental to seeing how Jesus accomplishes, fulfills, embodies what has come before and what has been said before than even just, you know, what we usually look of and think of as fulfilled prophecy, you know, in that regard.
Yeah, if you need us to unpack one of those for you, we'll be happy to do that. There's several that are mentioned in here. Before we get done, we do want to say something to families, because we promised in week number two we would say something specifically to help families connect this to their children. One of the things, if you have younger kids, that I think we can do is take the time to talk about the birth story again. It's
right.
a good opportunity to go and do that. But even with the young minds, to begin introducing this idea that this is not a biography. There are themes here, and kind of begin to help them see the themes.
Well, and when we say, you know, one thing that can be helpful, I think, especially in talking to our children, when we say it's not a biography the way we think of, that's why details you would like to know aren't there. You know,
yeah.
when we're used to picking
much
up—
much to my frustration.
Right. You know, but when you pick up a biography, we're used to kind of a more complete, you know, stories
right.
of the childhood, stories of early education, stories, you know, and so much that's—
flannel graph.
Yeah. And that's right. And so much of what we'd like to know is not here. Why? Because this is not a biography
yeah.
in the sense that we normally want, which is the whole point is to narrate the whole life.
There really is a valuable lesson there in training our kids how to read the Bible.
Right.
And I think sometimes that's a lesson we need to learn because it doesn't always flow the way we want it to flow
right.
or work the way that we want it to. The other thing that I think would be really helpful, especially with your older children, your teenage children, is to let them tackle this first. Encourage your teenage kids to read the Bible. And then on the Bible reading handout, there are just sort of three generic questions that I think you'll be able to use pretty much on any chapter we're going to be going through this year. The first one is, what do you see? When you read that, what stands out at you? And just sort of brainstorm the text with them. See what sticks out to them as being important. Number two is, what is hard? Because sometimes it's just like one word or one verse or a phrase that becomes a roadblock to getting the text. And if we could figure that one out, now I see how it works. And so talk to your kids about what's hard and acknowledge that sometimes Bible study is hard and you have to work at it. And then number three, how does this chapter challenge you? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, once we've understood what the Holy Spirit was trying to communicate, we need to be looking for the application. How does this speak to my life, and what do I need to be doing with it? I think especially about this Gentile stuff. It's a reminder that God has always been interested in every soul, and the kingdom of God is for everybody, and that's what we need to be doing, getting out and everybody, helping everybody find their way to Jesus. Again, if you guys have some specific questions, we are certainly willing to take some time and work on those. Even if it's about something we read last week or the week before, we can go back and take a look at those again as we make our way through the Gospel of Matthew. So we hope your reading this week is going to be a blessing to you and to your family.